Right, hello. yes, I do have a story in the anthology that Alison's Dennis Neville story is in, but it, like hers, it's very long, and I think it's also would be a really hard one to read aloud. So I'm going to read you a news story which hasn't been published and hasn't even been read to anybody, so you're my guinea pigs, okay?
Hey, we're
quite lucky. You're my guinea pigs, because also, for me, this is completely new subject matter. It's set on a yacht in the Antilles. So I won't even go into why I've done this strange thing, but it is a completely new departure for me. The other thing I've done, just to make life really hard for myself, is I've got one Norwegian character and two Australians, and I can't do accents. So I'm not even going to... Well, you can help me with the Australian, yeah. The girl is Norwegian, the two men are both Australian. I'm not even going to try, so if you can supply your imaginations in the accent department, that would be helpful. Mm. And I think it should come out at about 20 minutes. It's called Davy Jones's Locker. Mm. The girl joined the boat at Tortola. She was originally from Norway and had been living in St. Thomas with her boyfriend, but that had gone sour. Now she wanted to work her passage back to Europe. She was slight, no more than 60 kilos, Miles estimated. She had long dark hair which she wore braided and pinned up, and her skin still had a northern pallor that looked almost ghostly in the Antilles. "You have crewed before?" asked Miles. "There's only me and Danny Boy here, and he's still wet behind the ears." "Sure, Rotterdam, Madeira, Gibraltar on a private yacht, and Stockholm to the Arctic and back with Aurora Voyages." "See the lights?" Dan asked. "Of course." She sounded defensive, but maybe it was her accent. "I'd love to see 'em," he said. "Never been that far north. In photos, there's always a lot of green." "They're all colours," she said flatly. Dan showed her her berth and brewed up while she was unpacking. Miles ducked into the galley to raise his grizzled eyebrows at Dan and mouth. "Frigid." Dan grinned. "Ice maiden, she'll thaw." When the girl came into the tiny galley, the old guy and the boy smirked at her, and she thought, not for the first time, that perhaps she should not have come here. The sea breeze swung alone at the end of its pier, out of earshot of other boats. And if she felt like this here, how would she feel with these two in the emptiness of the mid-Atlantic? "I will take my coffee on deck," she told them, and made her way up the narrow stairs, feeling their hot eyes on her tail. It took her 5 minutes to appraise the boat. Splintered boom, dirty deck, green brass. The dinghy was hulled, and there was a lump of machinery lying aft, which looked suspiciously like part of an engine. And they were planning to sail her from the West Indies to Lisbon? When Dan joined her on deck, the girl was sitting in the shade of the cuddy. She looked at him and frowned. "Miles is boss?"
"Too true."
"When must we leave?"
"When we're ready. Got to do a few repairs, spruce her up a bit. Back end of the week?"
She received this in silence. "Do you want some factor 30? Sun's pretty fierce today." "I prefer to cover up." It was true. She was wearing loose cotton trousers and a long-sleeved shirt.
"Yeah, but you'll be in and out of the water."
"I have sun cream." Her rudeness reminded him of a German student he'd known in Sydney. Maybe it was a Northern European thing. "He is okay?" she asked, with a tilt of her head towards Miles, still below deck.
"Bit of a wanker. Likes to pretend he knows it all," Dan laughed. "But he's the one with the dollars, so we need to keep him sweet."
She did not reply, and he wondered if she understood his English. When Miles came up, he'd made a list of the stuff they had to do before they could leave.
"Why are you going to Portugal?" asked the girl. "Taking her to her new owner, I'm selling her, if that's all right by you."
Miles did not smile, and Dan glanced at the girl, but her expression was unreadable. She redeemed herself temporarily by volunteering to patch the dinghy. "I have worked with fiberglass before." Miles dispatched her to find the fiberglass kit in the stores, and although it took her a while, it was a shit heap down there, Dan knew. Boxes of canned food, batteries, engine oil, spare line, needed sorting.
She came up with a box and laid the contents out methodically beside the dinghy. The men were going to buy supplies and see if their engine part had come. "You can cook tonight," Miles told her. "This kid's cooking is shit. Kitchen needs a woman's touch." They laughed. "Any special requests?" asked Dan. "I am vegetarian." "Sweet Jesus," Miles. "But I don't mind to cook fish for you. Chickpeas and beans will be good for the store. I can make fish and salad tonight." Miles said something she did not catch, and he and Dan disembarked together. When they returned, the hole was neatly and methodically covered inside and out with overlaid fiberglass squares, and the smell of glue hung heavily over the deck. The men were laughing loudly about something. Among the goods they hefted aboard were several crates of beer. Dan came forward to inspect her work. "Nice one. Want a tinny?" She thanked him gravely and set the can down in the shade. "We got your tuna steak to cook." Miles came up behind him, mobile clamped to his ear, and gesticulated for them to take the stores below. Dan saw that the girl had swept out the hold. "Food this side," she told him. "Other supplies opposite. You can move this gear. It is too heavy for me." The girl found the galley dirty. Grease in the sink, crumbs and scraps underfoot. She was puzzled to find only one bin. "Where do you put different types of waste?" she asked them. "Davy Jones's locker," said Miles. He raised his empty can to her, then deliberately hurled it over his shoulder. "I am sorry?" "Overboard," Dan said apologetically. "But cans? Bottles? Plastic?" Miles rolled his eyes. "A fucking recycler, that's all I know." "I will put a box for glass and cans," she said, "and a bag for plastics. We will not pollute the sea." As she descended into the galley again, she heard their laughter. Once she had cleaned the stove and made a salad, she unwrapped the parcel of fish. There were three large steaks, dark and bloody red. Her first thought was that they were playing a joke. It must be meat. When the metallic smell of the blood hit her, darkness washed into her eyes and she had to sit down. She sat with her head between her knees, waiting for the dizziness to pass, and Dan, hunting for a light, found her like this. "All right," he said. "It is meat. It makes me..." She gestured. "It's tuna, fresh tuna. That's what it looks like." "But blood..." He laughed. "Bit different from that grey stuff in cans, eh?" He dipped back out and up the stairs. If she did not cook it, they would think she was weak. Averting her face and holding her breath, she scattered salt and pepper over the bloody lumps, heated oil in the pan until it spat, and stabbing each steak at arm's length with the bread knife, dropped it into the fiery pan. Swallowing down her revulsion, she turned them with the bread knife and a spatula, and was rewarded with a blackened crust over the pink flesh. Now she could handle. She lowered the heat and cooked the other side more steadily. When she had served the men, she cleaned the pan and made herself an omelette. "Try a bit," urged Dan. "It tastes fantastic." "It was a living creature," she said. Miles snorted. "Hippy-dippy bullshit." He began to quiz her about her experience of bad weather. "Tropical storms, typhoon, hurricane?" She shook her head. "Well, you will. You're going to be fucking shitting yourself." "Language, mate," said Dan. "I'm not your fucking mate," said Miles. The two of them laughed uproariously. The girl said goodnight soon after and retreated to her cabin. Miles rolled his eyes. "Won't last." "Fair dues, she can cook. And she cleaned out the hold." "No flesh on her. She's not strong enough, mate." "Well, she did okay with the fiberglass." "You're going to cover for her. How much of those stores did you end up lugging down to the bilges?" Dan remained silent. "What use will she be in bad weather? Crew this small. Everyone needs to pull their weight. She's a lightweight." "She's only just got here. Give her a day's grace." When she climbed into her bunk after inspecting the none too clean sheets, the girl could still hear them laughing and carrying on above her head. Miles, she thought, was a nasty man. Dan was not so bad, but he was young. He couldn't be more than 21, and he was subordinate. He would do what Miles told him. If she could have afforded to, she would have left, but she had no ticket home and she needed to get out. No choice, she told herself. They were sexist pigs, but she did not think they would hurt her. In the morning they were both rather subdued. It was a still, sunny day. The girl was polishing the grab rail when Miles emerged. He shook his head. You can get your polishing gear out when we're underway. Nobody here we need to impress. Only Mr. Moneybags in Lisbon. The girl sat back on her heels and waited. You and Dan gonna go below and give her a good scrape today, he said. Weed, barnacles, we're trailing a ton of shit. The wetsuit they offered her was too big, so she put a t-shirt over her bikini to stop the buoyancy jacket from rubbing against her skin. There was a belt with knife, scraper and torch attached. Needless to say, the batteries did not work. She could feel Miles's eyes crawling over her exposed flesh, and in her hurry to get into the water, grabbed the first mask that came to hand. Once she was in the water, it misted over and she realised it was slightly too big. She could see, but not brilliantly. They had agreed that she would take the port side, down the starboard. It was already clear to her that it would be a race, that they would judge her if she finished after Dan. The hull was thickly encrusted. It hadn't been cleaned for an age. She adjusted her flotation jacket until she could stabilise, level with the keel, and taking the scraper in both hands, began to work. The stuff did not come away easily, and if you didn't get the barnacles at first sweep, they became almost immovable. She had never done scraping before, but she was reminded of childhood explorations in rock pools, gathering shells into her bucket. If you knocked a limpet sharply with the edge of your spade, it fell off easily. But if you only tapped it, it redoubled its strength and clung on. Like grim death, as her father used to say, it clung on to its rock, like grim death. Her arms were aching after 10 minutes, and she had cleaned maybe 1 square meter. She was tempted to swim round and check on Dan's progress. No sooner had the thought entered her head than she sensed him behind her. Good. Maybe he was finding it hard work too. She turned to face the dark shape in the corner of her vision, and it became a silver blur in the water, streaking away under the boat, shape of an arrow, 2 meters long, fast. In her panic, she didn't know how she got to the surface, only that she was gasping for breath and her heart was hammering in her chest when she reached the rope ladder, and that the weight of the tank as she heaved up into the air nearly pulled her down into the water again. The deck was empty. Miles, she shouted. Dan? There was splashing behind her, and Dan hauled himself quickly up and flung his mask on deck. What's up? Miles appeared from the companionway. Barry, said Dan. Fucking Barry's back. Who is Barry? Asked the girl. Dan loosened his tank and let it slide to the deck. Barry the Barracuda. He's been shadowing us since Santa Lucia, the biggest barracuda you ever saw. Yes, she said. I see him, nearly 2 meters. I think it is a shark. Dan shook his head. We fed him scraps of meat and fish. It was good fun watching him dash after them, like lightning. He lives under the boat. He's followed us for days. I hadn't seen him since we docked. They're territorial, said Miles. He was that close, said Dan. Teeth like a pike. Take a nasty chunk out of you with them, said Miles. Well, what are we going to do? The girl loosened her tank and took off her belt. Okay, this was not her problem. Only one thing to do, said Miles. What's that? Harpoon the fucker. There was a silence. Well, said Miles. Can't we just scare him off, asked Dan. Like how? Pulling faces? But he's followed us across the ocean. We've encouraged him, for Christ's sake. It'd be like harpooning your dog. You want to encourage him to eat your ass? How about we move on a few miles, see if we can shake him off? You mean, get in the fast lane and jump the lights? We're not exactly hard to follow, twat. The girl moved away to the opposite end of the boat and sat facing out to sea with her back to them. If they kill him, she told herself, I will leave this boat. They are a pair of bastards anyway. I will work in the bar till I save my fare home. We don't know that he'll attack, said Dan. I've seen photos of divers surrounded by them. You want to take that risk? Asked Miles. It just seems a bit nasty to kill him, said Dan slowly. He's only here because of us. Sweet fucking Jesus, we could have him for dinner. We'll get your ice maiden to gut him. That'll give her the willies. Look, he didn't go for either of us then. He just came up behind me for a look. Kill him, said Miles. Trust me, he's got a brain this big. He held his thumb and forefinger half an inch apart. And the world he lives in is kill or be killed. Thought you were talking about yourself there, said Dan, attempting a grin. Miles spat over the side and took out his mobile. I want the hull scraped today, and I want you and her to do it. He tapped a number into his phone and went below deck. Dan sat for a while, letting the sun warm him, feeling the pleasurable prickling of the salt drying on his back. Then he ambled over to the girl. She did not look up when he said, Okay? But he sat next to her anyway. I reckon we should go down again, he said. What barracudas eat is those little silvery fish that follow the boat. Jacks, okay? We've spoilt him with scraps, but that's no reason for him to attack humans. And we must look just as big to him as he does to us. The girl turned to look at him, squinting into the sun. You will not harm him. There's no need. If we take it really slow, stick together, look out for each other, I don't think he'll bother us. He was just curious. There was a silence. You game? The girl stood up and pulled on her flotation jacket. When they were both geared up again, Dan unsheathed the knife from his belt. I'll go first, with this in my hand, just in case. Remember to keep your movements slow and steady. She nodded. He took a couple of steps down the rope ladder. A momentary loss of balance as his flipper knocked the side made him grab at the rope with his right hand. And the knife splashed into the sea. It went spinning and glinting down through the water to the sandy bottom, and before it landed, the big fish had flashed out from under the boat. Holding themselves motionless, the divers watched him. After a long moment eyeing the knife, he gave a lazy flick of his tail and swung back into the darkness beneath them. Breathed Dan. It's okay, said the girl. You know, it is okay. He sees the flashing, like those little fish he eats. When he checks it is not his food, so he goes away. She selected a new mask and spat inside it and smeared the saliva over the visor with her thumb. She put it on carefully, easing it over her braids. What about the knife? She peered down into the water. I will fetch it. Here. She passed her own knife to Dan. Move. She fitted her oxygen tube and lowered herself down past Dan, entering the water soundlessly. It felt cold after so long in the sun. This time her mask was clear. She could see everything. She adjusted the flotation jacket and turned, swimming slowly and strongly for the knife. She felt the muscles in her arms and legs contract and expand with each stroke. She was concentrating on making her style perfect, drawing slowly and rhythmically on her breathing tube. She was streamlined, weightless, invisible, invincible. Reaching for the knife, she raised it balletically to her waist and She was streamlined, weightless, invincible. Reaching for the knife, she raised it balletically to her waist and slipped it into the empty sheath. When she turned to swim up, she saw the barracuda lurking in the shadow of the boat, facing her. He could be on her in one dart. Holding the bubble of panic clamped tight in her belly, she made herself swim slowly and deliberately for the ladder. The barracuda didn't move. Dan was waiting just below the surface. He gave her the thumbs up. They started scraping near the ladder, close to safety, ripping the scrapers through the barnacles and weed as if they were ripping through layers of old wallpaper. The movement felt too much, but you couldn't do it weakly. The girl found her heart beating more and more savagely in her chest. It should be all right. She had done the most dangerous thing. It should be all right, but... Dan put his hand on her arm to still her. Turning to him, she saw the murky shape alongside, growing larger, looming. And suddenly it was there, the barracuda's head, inches from theirs, his flattened, disapproving face, his all-seeing eyes, the deep blue-grey of his side and the chalky whiteness of his belly. The pointed teeth of his upper jaw hung over the lower like fangs. He looked like a giant piranha. Humans and fish trod water. He inched closer, seemingly inspecting their work. Then he was gone, and the powerful eddy of his turn was enough to knock the girl against the side of the keel. Dan steadied her, then swam the circuit of the boat. He came back and gave her the thumbs up. It took them an hour to finish the port side, and then they went up for a break. "He's still there," Dan said as he dragged off the mask. "He's just sitting there under the middle of the keel, like a sentry." "No," the girl laughed, "not a sentry. He is our overlooker, do you call it? Overman?" "Foreman," said Dan. "Watching that we do a good job." Miles eyed them sourly. "Bloody stupid kids." "This girl," said Dave, "this girl, mate, has more guts than the two of us put together." The girl was pleased. "The barracuda who has followed you, he is our luck," she said. "Now, no harm will come." "Yeah, right," said Miles. The girl and the boy laughed.